We dealt with the Yerushalmi already. I'd like to take a look at the Bavli now. The sugya is, on the surface, it's not exceedingly complicated, but when you dig down a little bit, it's a little bit more complicated. And I actually want to go to suggest a totally, a somewhat different mahalach for the sugya than the Rishonim suggests, because in terms of the pshat of what the Amoraim are saying. So you've got to remember, when you're doing that, for the moment, you have to set aside the framework of the Gemara and think about what the statements of the Amoraim are. So let's take a look at the Mishnah one more time. Eitan, can I ask you to read the last half of the Mishnah? I want to think about this very carefully.
We'll go back to
Memorandum Base. We're doing Memorandum Base, but also let's... You don't have to turn a page for this one.
Yeah.
Yep. No. After that, how you look on? Okay. Now, how you look on minim harve? What does minim harve mean?
Very unconnected.
Okay. You would take a very conservative, careful, good reading. Meaning mean different kinds of foods. We immediately, I'm going to be even more radical here. I make a bracha on an apple. Okay. Thank you, God, for the apple. Okay, I won't be like Binyamin Raya. Erchat Hashem, Lekeinu Ma'aflam by creation. Excellent. I now want to eat an orange. Do I have to make another bracha?
Were you intending to keep the orange when you originally ate the apple?
That's a fair question. Let me say that you make my life impossible because I can't say I don't know was the answer. But let's pretend we don't know. Let's ignore that consideration. Let's do it anyway. Do you have to make a broth on the orange?
I have no idea.
Listen, Shimi, before you learned how much broth was this year,
yeah.
If you made a broth on an apple, okay?
Yeah.
And there were no oranges on the table. Yeah. And your mother said, "Shimmy, do you know I got your favorite Valencia oranges? If you want to have some in the fridge, would you have made a bracha on the orange?"
Probably not.
Okay. I think that's honestly, I think most people would say that. Now you all of a sudden realize there's a consideration of, oh, hesed hadas, or I didn't have it in mind. We learned the Ramah. Okay. Which, by the way, if you learn the Rashba at the end of this, the last Rashba in this piece of it, in the sugya, he doesn't necessarily assume that way. If one was, it sounds like from the Rashba that if you had Matzeh for Yehuda, you had a Shivas Aninim fruit, the one you're supposed to make on, Kipastim is like Rabbi Yehuda. If you had a grape, your grapes, and then you had an apple, it sounds like from the Rashba, even though you didn't have in mind the apples, the bracha on the grapes will pass through the apples. No, if you make the bracha on the one you're supposed to, whereas if you make the bracha on the one you weren't supposed to, the apple, only if you had in mind the grapes. Otherwise, it wouldn't cover it. Now, that is not the same as the Ramah, because according to the Ramah, unless the Ramah was only talking about Shabbat to Shabbat, and again, Rashba doesn't talk about what if it turned out you had, there's no such thing as you had two things that were not Shabbat Chaminim, and one of them was, they were equally Chavit to you. And in order for you to choose which one you're going to eat first, you have to flip a coin. So, I don't know if the Rashba would say that. I have to go back and reread to see. Am I correct, though, about the other point? The Mashmos is if you make the bracha on the Shivas Aninim, even if you didn't have the other one in front of you, you don't have it in mind, you don't have to make a bracha. That's different than the Rama. I think that's different than the Rama. Rama may not be explicit. Okay. So I just want to challenge that premise that Shini had there. Why is it clear to you, where does it say anywhere that we've learned so far in the first Mishnah, the first Sages, at least until this Mishnah, where does it say that just because I made a bracha on the apple, I'm pato on the orange? I don't think we take that as a given, partially because we've raised that way, partially because it is a halacha on a banana, right? Shimi's case, that's not as clear. If it's not as clear as in Shimi's case.
Maybe the distinction is that the bracha should, meaning you're saying that maybe the bracha should only be on whatever
I'm holding
right now.
Or maybe what's in front of me, or maybe apples get their own bracha, oranges get their own bracha. It's how do we know that, in other words, what?
I thought of that. Why?
That's it's good that you thought about it because I literally have not thought that granular. I have not thought till this moment that I'm saying I'm going somewhere with pieces that come close to this. But I didn't really think about this till this second. It's like, okay, thank you, God, on an apple. It's a beautiful apple. Thank you so much. Okay, and now I eat an orange. Why shouldn't I have to thank God for the orange? Because it's the same bracha, and that's very nice because that's That's what we've been taught to think, which is how we pass them, in principle. Yes.
So I mean, so one monkey, this is different, but like we know in Hamas, right? The Hamas you can pop out of it. So there's some.
How do you know that? How do you know that? You see where I'm going now. See, this is the problem with learning. The problem with learning Gemara, sometimes, and the Sefer Torah, is that you don't know the end of the sugya. You don't know the whole parak. You don't know the whole mahalach until you get there. So sometimes, because the way the way the Masabre Hashas edited things, they're like very often opening sugya. I don't think we had this in our parak, but very often opening sugyos know things that you don't actually know until later, because the opening sugya is often the last thing that the Masabre would compile. I think the first paragraph of Metziah has some component of that. Classic example of that is the 10th paragraph of Amos, maybe the first paragraph of Amos also. Very often, I think the first sugya of Amos also probably. There are many places where the opening, the sugyat peticha, assumes knowledge that you don't know yet, because it knows the matzanas. So, on the one hand, the problem with learning Gemara is that you haven't learned the rest of the Gemara yet. The other problem is when you have learned the rest of the Gemara. And it influences the way you think. Now here it's not because you know the rest of the Gemara, but because you know the halacha. You know that that's certainly the meal, although what you actually been taught is kind of wrong. You're actually wrong about that. Does Berachas Hamazon pater all the foods?
No.
No, it doesn't.
Well, I was just
Hamotzi does not pater all the foods. Rabbi Chiya says that. Rabbi Chiya says Hamotzi is king of the foods and Parakam is king of the beverages. But we don't pater like Rabbi Chiya, at least on the foods. Unless you say I'm crazy, what do you mean? We make hamotzi and we don't make other brachos. Well, yes, because there is a component of tofel there. There's a component of being tofel. Maybe not exactly the Mishnah's case of ikur tofel, but just an idea that everything that's meal food is subservient. That's the next sugya, by the way, after this. That's why I'm smiling, because we have to at least question some of our most basic principles. In the end, we may or may not come out that that conclusion is correct, but it's not. Don't assume the conclusion before you know it. So that's why you read Mishnah Hayu Lefanav Minim Harbe. So on the one hand, it becomes clear from the Mishnah for sure that what is. So now that I've tried to rip out all the foundations, now let's go back to the Mishnah. What is clear when you have an apple and an orange there? Shouldn't
they? You only make a bracha on one of them.
You only make a bracha on one of them. However, how did you know that? Because the Mishnah said Hayu Lefanav Minim Harbe. Very nice. Let me ask you a question. What if you have an apple and a cup of water and a banana? Let's say a banana. How many brachas do you make?
According to your
sons. Which Yerushalmi?
The story makes you
have four. Oh boy. Yeah. True.
Wait, what? What are you?
The simple reading of the Yerushalmi, the Bar Kapara story, is it was going to be one bracha, who was going to get it?
Well, but then in the end,
we don't know what the Gemara said in that Shahakal. But even in the end, well, it's a question. No, so the Gemara says not to make the Shahakal. The question is, you could read that story, except for that they said, what was the Girsa? The Girsa was that the Kruv would exempt the Achayana, but not the Pargias. And Achayana wouldn't pater either of them, although somebody tries to change the whole girsa, right? To say there's the whole thing missing in this wing. But let's ignore all. You can't say quite that, Ronnie. You can't say that one paters everything. I'm actually, to be honest, more interested in the question of. The only thing we could say there is that the shahakol, if you made the shahakol on the pargios, it's fair to say you wouldn't make any other brachas. Now, I want to put aside the shahakal stuff, although I may be wrong for doing that, because right now the Mishnah has given us peros ha'ilan, peros ha'adama, and it's given us shahakal, and now it says hayu lefan of minim harbe. So, I went so far as to argue, and I believe that I'm wrong, because I told you in Shir that the pshat in the Mishnah is it berachasem shavas or in berachasem shavas.
Shabbos.
I said Shabbos because I said Allahu Mavarach, you only make one bracha. I stand by my diuk, but not by the inference. The diuk is you're only making one bracha, that's correct. It's Allahu Mavarach. Chila is Chila is enough of a chiddush that the Gemara didn't even believe it was possible. Right? The Gemara in the second Lashon asks, if Eimish Eimber Chasim Shabbos, am I fleeing? And the Gemara says, Lahaftim. As the Rashba points out, that one way of understanding the question is, like, you need to tell me that it's all about Akdama? And the Gemara says, yeah, it's all about Akdama. That's not Pshat Mishnah. Pshat Mishnah is not Allahu Mubarak Tila, it's Allahu Mubarak. The question is, what are the meaning there? And I think, I'm a little reluctant to say this about Shahakal, but I think that the Pshat Mishnah might be, and we'll show you how you're going to have to look at the Amoraim, you have to ignore the son of the Shachnakariah, that it might be things of different brachas, certainly the Amoraim 8, and according to the time of the Mishnah, the Tanaim, both the Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda, you only make one bracha. Now, on what basis, how is it possible that you have a Zayis and you have a Tznon, and you make a bracha on the Zayis, Bo'ei Kriya 8, and you don't have to make a bracha on the Tznon? If you had a Tznon in front of you, and you made a bracha of Bo'ei Kriya 8 on the Tznon, would you be Yotze? No. That's clear. That the Mishnah already said. So what if you have a Tznon and an olive in front of you, and you make a bracha Bo'ei Kriya 8 on the olive? You have to make a bracha on the Tznon. So, I'm wondering whether or not the Pshat Mishnah, and I'll show you a couple, it is that this is some type of Ikra V'Tafel situation. Now, I'll give you the form that I don't think is the case, but it comes close, and then I'll tell you what the Rashba says. I didn't give you this Rashba, but he says in the opening part of the Gemara, and I'll point it out there. I'll point that where he places that. Firstly, imagine a fruit salad where you have cut up melon and you have grapes and maybe citrus fruit slices. What bracha do you make on the fruit salad? Yeah, that is, you know, Ephraim identifies the Magen Avraham as the first place that you find your thing. In other Moshe, you know, with the Raisinets, you make two brachos, which I would say anyone, once it comes to Raisinets, there's no reason to make two brachos, even if you think in those modes of making two brachos, because the raisin is ha'etz, the chocolate is really ha'etz. The sugar, according to some of the Gonim, is ha'etz, even though more likely ha'adama. I think you make ha'etz on Raisinets. Okay. So what would you do on the fruit salad? So you're thinking, do I pick it apart? The question is, you're supposed to figure out what's the eco, what's the tasa. Now, this is very close. Right, so with the karovas, that's easily separable, right? It's not like a cholent. I mean, even a cholent, something, but it's not like something that's really, really blended. So food comes to say, okay, well, I'll just take a grape out, and I'll eat it, and I'll pick a piece of watermelon, and I'll eat it, and I'm good. Which, by the way, you could argue is a bracha shenet tzvich. So ordinarily, I'm tempted to say, well, look at a majority. Right? That's what you're saying. So that's one possibility. Probably the fundamentum harbor, but I don't know that this is a fruit salad necessarily. But going a little step further away from that, because the Rashba says this. Is it possible that when you're having fruits, okay, you come in and you say you're looking for some nash, and your mother says, you come out, why don't you have some fruit? It's a category. So you imagine that, and I'll take fruits can contain the melon. So what are you sitting down to eat? Are you sitting down to eat watermelon and grapes, or are you sitting down to eat fruit? So that's how you will find out meaning of it. And it may be that once you decide what is the king of the fruits in this context, Chaviv Shiva Saminin, you make the bracha on that, and it tatters everything else, because everything else is tafel for that. And it doesn't matter if it's blended together or both. So the Rashba says, he will say explicitly, raises the hamamina, and explains something to the Gemara, which is that chaviv makes the other things tafel to it. And there's no reason you can't say the same thing for Yehuda. That when you have a group of things, and it may have to be roughly in the same category, it might have to be pelos, which can include a radish and an olive. So then, you're going to make a bracha on only one of them. The bracha that you're going to make, by the way, on, if you make a bracha on the radish, according to this thinking, why will there be no need for a bracha on the olive? Correct. Not because Bari Kriya Adama covers fruits. Of course it covers fruits if you make a bracha on the fruit. Here it's because it's covered pasha. Consider that possibility.
Then you just, I mean, essentially, you're going to come along and read the fine figure and come right up, like, significantly.
Well, so the Tanakhama. Are you the fun of medium
content? Well, yeah, but that's already understandable in the sense that, meaning, we could, like, what you suggested, that you have these things in front of you, so if what you consider the main part of it is, like, this is one thing I'm eating. But once
Rabbi
Yehuda gives his definition, that's like completely off the rails in terms of like.
Well, no, because so that's the point. What is Rabbi Yehuda telling us about the act of eating? Right? The Chachamim say, you have radishes, olives. You pick your stuff in front of you. You get to make one bracha because you're having fruit. You're having peiros. Peiros is what you're having. So the Chachamim say, whatever you like most, whatever you desire the most right now. So that is the ikar here, and everything else is subsumed under that. Rabbi Yehuda says, despite the fact that your appetite might tell you one thing, you know the pasuk in Chumash that praises Eretz Yisrael because it's Shiva Saminim. So Eretz Yisrael is always supposed to be on. It's supposed to be at the forefront of your mind. It's supposed to change the way you think. You're supposed to look at the mixture of fruits. Rabbi Yehuda says, say, well, I know I might like the taste of apple better, but I'm supposed to appreciate Eretz Yisrael. We borrow some, let's say, a pomegranate, and it makes me that I have to want the pomegranate because of Shevach Aretz. I mean, so that's a very, or you could take something less mosaic and say, Rabbi Yehuda just says, since the makkah for brachos in the Torah is from echad osavat harach, even though it's a bracha mishona, so the Torah clearly is in its preference for making the bracha on. But the idea that you're only going to make one bracha on this thing, because I'm sitting down to eat fruit. That's right.
How do you category, like, who says that the Mishnah has doubt is Zikr and the Mishnah here is something? This is the first Mishnah. We're introducing the categories here.
Well, I'm not really. I'm just thinking what, like, intuitively Ikr v'Tafel means, as opposed to what we would generally assume.
But if she's asking, what is your assumption of what Ikr v'Tafel means?
But I'm saying once we're going that far, it gets very close to the Kabbalah issue, meaning it gets very much closer to what we were saying it was before. We're just calling it a different topic. I'm not saying it's semantic, but it's just
okay. I want to leave that possibility open. I stand by you're making one bracha in the Mishnah. That I'm going to stand by. Allah from Mubarak. Not Chila the Pshat. But I would like to know, is it possible that in fact they are thinking that you make only one bracha and you're deciding what is the ikar of what you're eating here, Rani?
So it seems that we're basically saying right by now, when we say, like, is it before them all on the table, or is there something like, are you going to make a difference if, like, when someone's talking about making a bracha only on one item, would it make a difference if it's in a mixture of several, or it's going to be like multiple plates of different things?
I think I don't know, but I assume that if it's in the refrigerator, and you're not, I don't mean to invoke the Ramah here, but it's in the refrigerator, and you're not thinking about it, so that's not part of this achila. But once you put the stuff out, and I am having a fruit tasting, and but some fruits are dama, some fruits are eight, maybe vegetables are kinds of fruits, I've got some tomatoes there, so maybe in this mamad, right now, what we're talking about is I'm eating fruit. The food that is most special because it's my personal subjective preference, or because the halacha imposes an objective preference, maybe because the pasuk, even if we're not trying to rewire my brain. So maybe that is where I make the bracha on, and everything else is mitzvah to that faith.
So,
clarify
that. So, if you're saying is that the concept of ikarei tafel exists outside of.
Correct. Well, we knew we went for, one thing we knew for sure. Like there are presumably three ways to at least now have ikar v'tafel. Until now, we all started with ikar v'tafel. You have a stew. It's blended together. Now you have to define what is this stew. Because clearly it's only one thing. And then we went a step further and said, if you have a piece of herring on a cracker, right, the maliach and the pas. But that's also because you eat them at the same time. Literally, when I say the same time, it's like generally when you eat a pie with tefillin. You take a fork, you break off a piece of the pie with tefillin, And you eat it, right? You eat them at the same time, even though they're clearly separable. You can't take a cholin and easily sort it out. And if it's really blended, you know, again, cholins, you could probably, I mean, take a long time, you could pull out the barley. But you put potatoes, usually, you should pull out. But, right, so that would be correct. So that the point is they're easy to separate, but you eat it at the same time. And now we're going a step further saying, well, no, actually, I don't have to take my olive and stone and go, you know, with a sandwich. I ate olive, I ate stone. And there's equal top on there as well.
Well, I like, actually, so I have a box of blueberries.
Blueberries are good.
I have a box of radishes and a box of and a box of peaches.
Okay.
So now they're part of like a tarobes, even though they're not.
Who says tarobes? Where did you come up with tarobes from?
I might say
we've been misunderstanding with that, because the examples that we've dealt with have been in that category. But when you talk about eco, think about, let me ask you a question. Your mother makes Shabbos? I don't know. In your family? I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. What does she prepare for a Shabbos meal? What category? In the meal itself, not the dessert. What you know the terms. What does she say?
Mains
and sides. Translate main into Hebrew.
Ikar.
Right? It's not, in other words, it's not.
Yeah, but
it's the reason why, Jake. It's undoubtedly, why is Tas Poter, not Rochia, why is Tas Poter all the other things? That's Ikar V'Tafel. It's a specialized Ikar V'Tafel. Okay?
I can say that
first.
I don't think that there was any discussion of
what about Rabin Shmuel Koshiyesh Gomer Hayesh Samina? What? Oh, it doesn't take her a tafel. That's how the Rishonim understand. Okay, even better. I really did a number on you.
I think everyone.
But in the Gemara, I think
that they
are double.
But I think that it's
known in diet.
That's not
Hodas. You have the two things. He said you don't find it in
Hodas. It's very plausible that
Tarobis
is more popular than
it is without. So I just think we have to rethink that. Soon I'm going to have a few crazy Talmidim running around the yeshiva and make you guys up to make sure. Guys, you know, actually doesn't say that.
I think it makes more sense to adopt, I guess, it's a metaphysical food category.
I was reluctant. Look, I think it's shaka water, but let's say you have fish and fruits, have fish and vegetables and so on. Right? You understand intuitively the mains and the side dishes.
Okay.
So it may be that when you have an achila and you have different things in front of you, and your goal is to eat them, that there really is an ikar v'tafel here. Right. I don't know if this guy is eating a meal or not. Stone is eyes. I'm not sure about that. Again, a meal is its own thing, but it's a moshav achila that we have here, and it might very well be that ikar and tafel is a little broader than we realize, and that's what the Mishnah is telling us. But when it tells you halyup, if you think about it, Jake, just in the context of what the Seder Mishnah is. And that's why I'll give you shahakal as well. I'm hung up because I'm thinking water, but don't tell me water. Water is its own, is a totally different thing. And the Mishnah hasn't spoken about water yet, by the way, remember? That comes up in the last Mishnah in Perek, yeah. Right? Where Rabbi Tafran says, you say burn it. The Mishnah says in shahakal and Perek says burn it. So water is not one that is not fully meaning. Right? So we've spoken about essentially three kinds of meaning. Peiros ha'ilan, peiros ha'aret, and davar she'gidulam ha'aret. That's what we've spoken about. And now, how you in front of Minim Harbe. So why should one assume that it's Dafka, all in the same category? If you knew nothing, you know our practice, that's the problem. You know what we do, Halacha L'maisa. So you're sort of brainwashed, you're not reading the Mishnah with the Tabula Rasa. So,
if I was actually reading the Tabula Rasa, I probably would have said that you just make a breath on each group.
Okay, that is not out of the question. That is not out of the question. But then the Mishnah says, "Hayu lefanan minim harbe." So at the minimum, you have to conclude from the Mishnah is at least within one bracha, you only make one bracha, you know, you only have one height. Right? That's the tafastam muat. You guys are familiar with the expression? Tafastam, whenever you learn something, you have a choice to learn a lesson before you finish. The Gemara says, tafastam ruva lo tafastam or tafastam. You try to bite off too much, we would say, you wind up with nothing. You can't assume being finished, you can always assume the lesser finish. So at a minimum, tafastam muat is going to be that within categories, if you have fish, cheese, and eggs in front of you, Shahakal will cover all of them. And the only question is, which one should you make the bracha on? Everybody probably agrees there is shirta. The only, and within ha'adam and within ha'itz. But I would argue pshat in the Mishnah could be, you have a cheese, and you have an olive, and you have a radish, and the question is, which, you make one bracha, what's the ikar and everything else is difficult to it. If we don't think that way, because we already started out at time with this idea that ikar v'tafel is a blend. And now, and it could also include, and that is the way the Ritva formulates it, by the way. Ritva says, oh, by the way, ikar v'tafel is not only when it's at Harobeth, but even when it's two things eaten at the same time. So, yes, he's coming from a certain place, and again, I think it's the Mizonos Gemara, which, even though the Gemara doesn't say ikar v'tafel, that's why we show him think that way. But in terms of the order of the Mishnayos, and I think what the MRR is going to say, there's no evidence that you make more than one bracha when it would radically change my lunch strategy. What do I do? I have cheese and tomatoes and I have some cashews there, and that's my lunch. What am I do for bracha? I know what to do for bracha, but I'm going to make my Eitz Hadam and Shafa. But that's not the Mishnah would have me do. It would have been a lot. Oh, yes, correct. It would be a lot harder to get 100. That's correct. Yes. Rani.
So, the whole discussion about the Ikar and Tafel with regards to Ulav and how that might be a challenge.
With regards to
Ulav's understanding.
Yeah. We haven't gotten there yet. Let us get to the Gemara. Okay, but that's our reading the Mishnah. Again, the only thing I'm definitely persuaded of the Mishnah is you're making only one bracha. Whether these are multiple meaning of one bracha or multiple meaning across other brachas, we could argue that. I think it's multiple meaning across multiple brachas. That's the chat in the Mishnah. Now, that's why we have a machlokas on the line, exactly about this point. Now, what you are going to take for the shakta tari of the Gemara and the shakta tari you show them, and hear this so far away, so you start with an assumption of the only way, after you read the Gemara, what's the only thing that you think that maybe one bracha would cover another, other brachas? What's the one case in the Gemara, in this Gemara? Right? What's that? Oh, well, I would say Hadamah might cover Ha'itz, even though you didn't make Hadamah on Ha'itz. That's the one thing. That's the one thing that you would walk away with. That's the narrow reading that the Rishonim choose. Right? So let's read Ula. So read Ula. Okay, done? Okay, so the question is, what is Ula telling us that we would have thought otherwise?
That if it's more than one bracha categories, you have to make more than one bracha.
That he's correct. So the Havamina is that he's rejecting is to read the Mishnah exactly the way I just said, which is it's true even if ein bircha seim shavos. The Chacham and Rabbi Yehuda are trying to make a determination. You're only going to make one bracha. Which food are you going to make it on? It's true if the Berachos Seim are Shavos, it's true if they're not Shavos.
The Ula might not be talking about this, meaning he might be thinking not in Ikar v'tafel language, meaning we don't know.
But what is Ula rejecting? He's limiting the Mishnah. And what was he thinking when he said, Ein Berachos Seim Shavos? You might know this, somebody's going to come, and we know somebody would come along and claim, Ein Berachos Seim Shavos, the Machlokas still applies as well. And again, I want to emphasize, if you say the machlokas applies by Ein Berachos Seim Shavos, I know what the Gemara is going to say. The Gemara is, you'll say, but Ein Berachos Seim Shavos, you have to make two brachos. So what's the argument for that? So the Gemara is going to say, oh, lahaftin. But that's not pshat. The pshat is not lahaftin. Why is that not pshat lahaftin? Because the Mishnah says, olav u'mavarech. You're making one bracha. So the pshat in whoever said it, whichever one of the Amoraim, we don't know, said it. But the machlokas is even when ein birchoseim shavos. So the pshat is, you're making one bracha. The Gemara then is going to say, how can I be? My pregame say lahat. So, but Ula says, the clearest point that Ula is making is that if the two brachos are different brachos, you're mevarech al zeh, v'chozeh mevarech al zeh. Because one would have thought, Ula is assuming, and he's rejecting it, that if they had different brachos, you would make one bracha and it would be part of the other one. And again, of course, the question is, why would anybody have thought that if ein birchoseim and shavos? So again, the Rishonim, who addressed it explicitly, the Rashba is, I think, the best exposition of the sugya, is going to assume a very narrow assumption. He would have assumed that Ha'adama made on Ha'adama patters also the Ha'etz, even though you didn't make the bracha on that. Meaning the bracha on a radish, Ha'adama, means you now no longer make the bracha on any of the fruits that are there, the Bari Kreitz fruits. Because Ha'adama, just as if you made Ha'adama on the olive, you would be potter, you would have fulfilled your obligation. So to now, it's like just as we all started out assuming, if you make a bari kriya eitz and they're apples and they're oranges, the bari kriya covers everything, so too the bari kriya dama covers everything. Even if not, it's not the specific bracha for that fruit, even though it's a more general bracha. And the same thing, I would love to know, because the Gemara doesn't talk about it, what would they say about shahakol? What would they say about those categories? I'm not aware of any discussion of it. Okay, so now let's think for a moment what Ula is saying. To drill down, Ula says the machlokas is when birchoseim are shavos. So you have two ha'etzes. Let's assume for simplicity's sake it's two ha'etzes because it could be, what other brachos could it be? What are the situations when you have a bracha that's shayach to shivas aminim and shayach to other foods? Shimon? If you assume that Rabbi Yehuda would state his din when it comes to klayos, which are roasted wheat kernels, maybe roasted barley kernels, and normally roasted wheat kernels, you make hadama on them, and you make hadama on carrots. So you could say that in that category also is Birchos Hayom Shabbos. You can't do it by. I mean, there's one of the cases you could do. God, if I. What? No. I think so. If we don't give praise to the Torah, to the first parable, over it as well, over the dates that fell off the tree. I think not. Like the same way that they understand that the Rambam, you don't make a bracha on free food. It's not a Shevach to Kaddish Baruch.
We also count dates and as oil.
Yeah, but taste them are perfectly delicious when you prepare them.
That wasn't a Shevach, that's a.
How do you know that? I suspect people eat olives all the time. More of it was used olive oil because, for starters, if you want to preserve it, it's not going to last. I mean, you can pickle it, but I don't know that. Firstly, I also just want to say the Torah doesn't speak about olive oil in the pasuk; it speaks about oil olives.
But they're not going to call them oil olives to the fancy of olives. It's because that's a discussion.
Yeah, you know. Okay.
Technically, the UK tomorrow is straight out either.
Ronnie, any question?
Yeah.
I was thinking, by the way, rice and meat. That's where you were going.
Yeah.
So you can do all that. But okay.
If this is really about Yisham to fail, right, how should we read the Yisham?
No. But before we come back there, let's analyze Ula for a second. I'm going to lose my mind if we don't get to this. It's not easy. The problem, by the way, as you might know, with my derech halimud is some people like to have things go like this, converge at a point. That's not the way life works for me. My things diverge. Not an infinite number of possibilities, but okay. So Ula said that the machlokas is limited to a case where you're making when birchoseim are shavos. Now, from Ula's continuation, it's clear that the birchoseim shavos. How many brachos do you make? One.
You can only say one.
Now, correct. It's clear that Allah will mevarech is making one bracha, but if it were ein birchas hayom shavos, Ula says, you mevarech al zeh v'chozim mevarech al zeh. Now, which one do you make the bracha on? Whoa, no. He said that if it's ein birchas hayom shavos, divrei hakol mevarech al zeh v'chozim mevarech al zeh. So I'd like to know, what does it mean? Mevarech al zeh v'chozim mevarech al zeh. Which one? The simplest reading is he doesn't care. Meaning you can make a bracha on imeka eitz, meka adama, imeka adama, meka eitz. And presumably, we would have said the same thing with shahafel as well. The reason we don't is because Tosa says we don't because we have the story about kapara. Where clearly shahafel was the wrong bracha. Right? Because Rav Papa killed two guys. One of them because he ate chicken wings. They're different shitas. Some say because he wasn't vegan. Some say because he wasn't vegetarian. Some say because he made the shahakol first. Whatever it is, clearly the Ireland version in the Bible assumes that you're supposed to make, that the shahakol is supposed to be made after Eitz or Adama. That's clear from that story. And we don't know what the right choice was, but we don't know whether or not, assuming, what was it, Kurban Dumaskin, I think, and Hargios. So if you assume, especially like the Yerushalmi, that they're not skinless or eats. So we don't know which the right choice was, but we know Pargios was the wrong choice. So we can conclude that Shahakol, and when you have Eitz Adama, you do not make the Shahakol first. Shimon.
I always interpreted it that he was killed not because he was wrong about the bracha, but because he didn't ask for a kapar.
And the end of the story anyways is not the Shahakol
failure. In Yerushalmi.
Yeah.
No, but he said no. I think that he got angry because he made the wrong decision. If you made the right decision, then I don't think Bar Kapara would cry angry. You make the wrong decision, and you didn't consult. So that's what I think.
He was angry at the other person
because his behavior,
right.
And then he's angry at the first one because his behavior also because he didn't bother. You know, we're sitting here. Wait, right.
And
it just was cop out.
Right. In the Bible, it sounds.
The Bible is very. It's not Nos al Lahem Rishus.
Right. It sounds like it was about the decision. Fine.
Well, the Yerushalmi. Oh, yes, correct. Right. They preserve the cop out, but it's really. Okay, so. That's what Ula says. It sounds like. There's no difference which order you make it in. Now, this is interesting because it would imply that, right now we don't know what different types of things we're talking about, but the assumption would be you could make it either way. You could theoretically argue that everybody agrees that you make a bracha on the Shiva Saminim one, then you make a bracha on the other one. Now, I would never have thought that except for both Tosfos and the Rashbam, and it might be quoted with Haigon in the Rashbam, feel the need to tell you that that's wrong. And they say, firstly, it's more likely the Rabbim, Yachid's motive for the Rabbim. So it's not clear why somebody would opt to go down that path. But that path would be set, but the Hesper would be as follows. The Chacham and Rabbi Yehuda disagree when it's what you only get to make one bracha. Rabbi Yehuda says you're supposed to make the bracha on the Shabbat of Eretz Yisrael, and the Chachamim say that a bracha is far greater when you make the other thing that you're most grateful to the Boshon for, that's Chavit. But once you're going to make two brachas already, the Chachamim say, look, each bracha will be special in its own right, so we don't care. And therefore, why not give Hashivas to Eretz Yisrael by mentioning it first? Each bracha will be special in its own right. That would be the Svara as to say why the Chacham will be more to Rabbi Yehuda in this case. Now, the alternative, now, is there any reason that Rabbi Yehuda would say he agrees with the Chachamim that you should make the bracha on the Chavir first? I'm not so sure. But certainly the simplest reading is neither of them care what you make the bracha on. Rani,
I think the Rambam in the Chavir Chavir says if you have an Hadith, make them the Hadith. If you don't, make them the Mishabat.
Right.
which is kind of a great mission. I don't know. That's true.
No. He's talking about Berachasem Shabbos there. Right? And he says, you make it on the Chaviv, if there is one. Otherwise, you make it on the Dif. That's not by in Berachasem Shabbos. Right? I think he's talking about Berachasem Shabbos there. Where do I have my number? Where's that Rabbi? Which is test? Test your Gimel?
Oh,
I know, my source sheet is funny one, so. I'm not.
I think it's.
Hold on. 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 I think I know what the Rambam Sheet is for. Right, so the Rambam Sheet is that Chavid is like this, but if there's no Chavid, then why not make him the Shosham in the first? He passed things like the Chachavid. Against Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. And he passed them presumably like Ula. Although it doesn't matter, because once you pass like the Chachamim, it doesn't make it up. Okay, so now, it's not entirely clear what Ula thinks by Ein Berachasem Shabbos, there's another possibility, actually. If you say, there's another way. You could say what the Rabbanan by Bracha, what the Berachasem of Shabbos, the Rabbanan say Chavit. Ein Berachasem Shabbos, let me do it there for a moment. I think there's a third possibility. So now the Gemara asks a question. Go ahead, Eitan. Maybe. Slow down. Let's just read the Brisa. In fact, I want you so much to read. Let's read the whole Brisa. So the beginning of Brisa says, if you have a radish and an olive in front of you, you make a bracha on the radish, and you exempt the olive, which means you make one bracha, a bar pri hadama, and it covers the radish and it exempts the olive. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, you have to just skip over the Hakabai skin to the next line. Okay. So the Rabbanon say you make a bracha on the Tanakhama says you make a bracha on a stone and the Zayas is potter. And Rabbi Yehuda says you mevarech al hazayish. Hazayish v'min shah. Now, immediately you understand the problem with saying what the Gemara is going to say. The Gemara just breaks it up for you. But I want to ask a different question before you go there. What does it mean when Rabbi Yehuda says mevarech al hazayish? Sure.
Seems only the
hazayish. The shah is only on the hazayish. He certainly doesn't say from Baruch HaZayis to Tima. He doesn't say from Baruch HaZayis to Achakach HaLetzim. He says from Baruch HaZayis.
The
Gemara
is not assuming
that. I know that. Well, certainly, the Gemara is not assuming that in the way. What?
Yeah, I'm assuming that. Because it's assuming remission. Meaning, unless we're like really just going out on Ula, completely.
The Gemara is going to rework this thing. So I agree, once it reworks it, it totally neuters it. The question is,
I mean, even at this point, it's unlikely to be assuming more than just the one point of the nation. Meaning, the one point that we're really trying to get
The problem for Ula, before the Gemara gives this Ikar V'Tafel Teres, the problem for Ula is that he thinks that Ein Berach Hashem Shavos, you make two brachas. And presumably the order doesn't matter. And clearly here the Braisa says you only make one bracha. And the Pashtus is Rabbi Yehuda also says you only make one bracha. That's my point. In other words, when you read this Braisa, it's not necessary. For the Gemara Shachar and its question, it's not necessary. It doesn't matter. Well, the Gemara, the purpose of the Seifa for the Gemara is to prove that the Reish is not an Ikar V'Tafel. Because how could Rabbi Yehuda argue for an Ikar V'Tafel? And what emerges from it is that if you make a bracha for the Rabbanon on the stone, it passes the Zayis, even though the Gemara thinks right now it's not an Ikar. And it's not an Ikar V'Tafel, the both Ikar. And nonetheless, the bracha of Adama on the stone covers everything. The Pashtus of Rabbi, that we understand why. And that we understand why, because Adama covers our eights. We know what Rashi says. We know what Ula is, what Ula is saying. He's saying that we don't say that unless it's directly on the food. Granted, what is Rabbi, now, the Gemara's purpose in bringing Rabbi Yehuda right now is only to show that it's not an Ikar V'Tafel case, because otherwise how could Rabbi Yehuda say you make the bracha on the side? So now I know that the Gemara is going to, you say, retype the whole Braisa. It's going to totally upend the Braisa. But in order to be able to say that it's an Ikar V'Tafel case, but you only need to do that for Ula. This is a point that Rashi makes. I wouldn't have thought about this on my own. Let's jump to the second part. You know, there's somebody who says that there's a machlokas nami b'she'en berchosei shabbos. Okay, that they argue in both cases. So whether or not you're dealing with a zayis and an esrog, or you're dealing with a zayis and a tzon. So the way the Gemara works on the second opinion, that machlokas nami b'she'en berchosei shabbos. So how do you read the price of it? Would this price be a problem? Would this price be a problem according to that mandala? Well, that shita says that they argue both when you make one bracha, Lewis, and you make two brachas, which one you make or which one you make first. Meaning, on which food you make it or which food you eat first. So, that's what the Gemara understands the Gemara said. Now, I'm not proposing that. That's what the Gemara understands. So this Braisa reads straight. The Braisa says that when you have a tznon and a zayis, you make a bracha on the tznon, you part of the zayis. Rabbi Yehuda says, you make a bracha on the zayis. Now Rabbi Yehuda, if you really want, you could read Rabbi Yehuda holds that it's for tevila purposes, even though I don't think that's what it really means. But you can't, there's nothing you can do about the first part of the Braisa. The first part of the Braisa says, Yeah, so how is the man of Omar, Machlos Hasnami, Hishayim Yer Hasan Shabbos, going to handle that? The same way the Gemara handles it for Ula. It's going to have to say that's because it's Ikar V'Tafel. And it's going to have to retype the Braisa, except that the Rashba will say it does it a little differently. We'll talk about that. It's how you formulate that in the middle clause. Now, so we'll work through that. But I want to just make the following observation. The Rashba knows. It sounds the way that from the Gemara that the problem that we have is only against the Man Ha'amar, Kishibir Chaseim Shabbos, Machlokas Daftar Chaseim Shabbos, and that it wasn't the Kasha for against the other Man Ha'amar. Why? Because if you take the opposite of Ula, in the absence of Ula, your assumption was they would argue across the board. So why does the Gemara only first invoke the Mesre, only invoke this question, if it's a question according to everybody? So the Rashba ends up suggesting something else. The fact that the Braisa read the Pshuto is not a Tasha against the second day. It's only a Tasha against the Ula. Now, I don't remember how the Rashba says. I don't know if he says it this way, but I'll tell you what Pshat is. Pshat is the Danda Amarot that Machlokas Kishayim Berchosei Shabbos believes that if you mevarich on a stone, you're poter as a zayis. Now, there are two possibilities as to why. One, which everybody's going to assume, I'll accept for the moment, even though that's, I think, what's not going on here, is because Hagama covers her ace. The other possibility is that when you're eating in one moment, it's Ikur V'Tafel. But let's even give me the lesser Chiddush, the lesser Chiddush. If you take the lesser Chiddush, everything brings Pshat. The Rabbi Chachamim say, if you have a Tzron and a Zayas, you make a bracha on the Tzron. Because why? Because you like the Tzron better. And you path of the Zayas. How do you path of the Zayas? Well, the answer is because you made Ha'adama. You don't have to make Ha'itz on the Zayas. Rabbi Yehuda says, no. You're supposed to make a bracha on the Zayas first because it's Shiva Samina. Now, what then will Rabbi Yehuda hold? What Rabbi Yehuda holds with respect to the Tzron? You're thinking with the Gemara's reading, the way we've been brainwashed to think. It might be true. I suggested just before that, no, Kipshuto even, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you just make a bracha on the Zayas. The Zayas should be defined as deeper because it's Shiva Samina. It's possible. But the main focus in this Gemara, the pshat in this Gemara, is that what the Braisa proves against Ula. Ula was coming to say that Ha'adama not made on a fruit, made on something else, does not pater her eats on a second fruit. That's what Ula's chiddush is here. And the Braisa suggests otherwise. It says, the very hard stone, and then your poter says eats. So the Gemara has to answer, Hacha b'mayaskinan. So Ihachi. Right. Let me stretch out the last plus point here. The two most important words in this sentence are Ihachi. Right. You set up this problem only because you turned the first part into an Ikra B'Tafel. A classic Ikra B'Tafel. Right. A classic Ikra B'Tafel. So Ihachi, what do you do for Rabbi Yehuda? V'chi. Iyach yemesev. Rabbi Yehuda omer v'avos ha'shadash min shiva. V'chi, it's the vachim in Asia. V'chi. Less light.
V'chi, that's the Yehuda ha'adam kosher ikar v'yo the favor of the barak al ikar v'yo the favor. V'chi shema ha'adam yu v'chay. V'chay, Rabbi Yehuda omer imet and the shadash the barak al ikar v'yo the
favor. Okay. So here a bryce with Rabbi Yehuda's logo that if there's a real ikar v'tafel here, you made the bracha on the stone versus the size. So there's Rabbi Yehuda is saying, or he's saying, is that if you want to eat both the stone and the zayas, you make a bracha on the zayas. If the zayas is truly a tafel for the stone, not just because you like it, it's liking the stone better. The stone wanting to eat the stone first doesn't make it an ikar v'tafel. It makes it a chavit. But really, if you're eating, you know, olive flavored radishes, that's the way you like to have your thing. So the Yehuda says, well, yeah, that's a regular Ikra B'Tafel case. So again, what I am proposing is totally negative in the halakha of the Gemara. I'm suggesting that the whole point of the Mishnah is the Pshat in the Mishnah is Ikra B'Tafel. That's exactly what Ula's coming to reject. Ula's coming to reject the idea that this is an Ikra B'Tafel situation.
This is from the Yehuda, as Pagan,
Can we see that the mission isn't talking about bigger b'tavel? Because here's a clear case where you're like, oh, here we have a bigger b'tavel of this case. Brian, could you answer that question? That's a good question. His argument that the last fragments of the Braisa demonstrate that in that attack is how the mission is being read.
Okay, I just put in this ink. Because you're equating the way that we're using the kind of levels of the Mishnah with the terminology that he uses, and therefore you're inferring that the Mishnah is not that. Is that my correct
statement? Well, no, I mean, you're going to say that this is the meaning.
I'm going to say the theoretical thing here. I'm very suspicious of this Braisa. In other words, there are Braisas. We know there are Braisas that are Amorei Braisas. It's too convenient. The question here is, does the Ukinta the answer to the Hachamah schema generated because they know this Braisa, or is this Braisa generated by the Ukinta? So once I'm in this mode of interpreting not the way the Gemara has, I'm inclined to think the Braisa reads, M'varach HaTzon, M'poitos HaZayis, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, M'varach HaZayis, Shumim, and Shiva. You know, and then Rabbi Yehuda says, but I can't prove that. Yes, your question is a fair question. I don't want to go into the terminological road.
Wait, but you also, I mean, I don't know if this is, can you just say that, like, oh, it's, I mean, this wouldn't help, but I'm saying that the Baraita is just, I mean, I don't know, that the Baraita is just interpreted, it just like explains the Mishnah, or like it's a new type of more explanatory form.
I think what's fair, at minimum, you can say that if the Baraita's presentation in presenting what it knows about the Nachlokes of Yehuda and Mishnah, and in the absence of any explicit data otherwise, that's the way I would read the Mishnah, which is what you're saying, that's your question.
Yeah.
Right, but I am, you can say, I mean, you can say, you know, what Ephraim is saying, which is that clearly we know the difference between different kinds of Ikra V'Tafel. I'm already positing that there are different kinds of Ikra V'Tafel. In other words, I'm suggesting the Mishnah has a kind of Ikra V'Tafel. It doesn't use that term. I mean, it's fair to say it doesn't use that terminology because Ikra V'Tafel as a terminology might be reserved for, well, we spoke about three kinds. Harovis, which the Gemara never talks about, at least not in this context. Two things at the same time, which is all the Gemara talks about, the Mishnah and the Gemara. And then my idea that when you're eating things from Mamanacha, even though you're not eating them together, you're eating one, there's also a concept of Itafo. They can all exist where only one actually gets the label Itafo, which is the one the Gemara uses. Now, when the Gemara invokes the Braisa, it's definitely thinking like you. But I could say, give Ephraim's answer, which is no. I don't have to say this is one of, you know, Albeck's Amore Braisas. I can say, yeah, it's true, but the Braisas using a different terminology.
Yeah.
Like, and they are, the difference between, you know, there are two kinds of, it's clear that there's a difference between these two Ikra V'Tafels. The Ikra V'Tafels that's sown in the Zayas is like, it's like mustard on your hot dog. Clearly you understand you're eating them together, not blending, you're eating them together. One's an equal, one's a tafel. One adds a little bit there, but it's not why you're eating it. You would not eat the mustard alone. You would eat the hot dog alone. If you didn't have mustard, imagine you go to the wedding, and you know, it's very popular to go into the hot dog station, and you know, they come and say to you, well, we ran out of mustard. Will you have the hot dog? Probably. If they come and you have your mustard ready, say, we ran out of hot dogs, would you like some mustard? The answer is no. That's one thing. But there's another situation where, you know, you have hot dogs and hamburgers and maybe chicken wings, and they might put all on your plate, and if they don't have what? Never mind. Let's not go there. Brownie and Fine understand. Let's not go there. Anyway, so if you have all three things on your plate, let's say you come and they said, well, sorry, we have no pargio, we just have hot dogs and hamburgers. No, no, you can't. Of course not. So how about that? So that's what our Mishnah is talking about. You know, that type of Ikra V'Tafel. Okay. Everyone's entitled to their opinion. I doubt that animals eat hot dogs, though. By the way, you're principally wrong. Sausage is a very classic part of many different cultures. The hot dogs that we have are garbage, but you know, sausage, which is what sort of a hot dog is modeled upon, there are a lot of different cultures that have a well-known German culture, you know, so. Yeah, all the cheap knockoffs in America. You know, America is the land of cheap food and cheap and multiple marshmallows. Like, it doesn't... Okay.
Isn't it
sort of
actually thought to start raising
taxes that are Indian? Here's the problem. The problem is okay. So this is an intuition, which is it's such a convenient price. It's like again, this is an extreme example, but if you look at the last mission of the first paragraph of Abakama, Hamisha Kama Hamisha, we have to look up after that. And this Ravina, who gives this extensive, lengthy ukimta to explain the Chamisha Tam and Chamisha Ravina. And then the Gemara says, Tayyin Ami Achim. Okay? Now,
so some of them are verbatim.
I'm just wondering, why does the Gemara, if it had, how could the Gemara have asked the question initially? From the Braisa, if this was the ending of the Braisa,
we can't have a Braisa like this, we know that's a real Braisa, and the Gemara goes to the Shabbat Kari, and says, how did you get the end of the Braisa? It's actually, we said, well, what is not a good answer?
It's a very strange presentation, though.
But it happened. possible.
The problem with this price in general is we don't have it anywhere. This is all we have.
There are many prices we don't have elsewhere. That makes sense.
I don't know. The problem is that was not suggesting, therefore, my interpretation is correct. It just means there's no data with which to work. That's the problem.
If you don't have it, there's no reason to question it, really.
Yeah. Maybe. Okay. Listen, I'm happy to offer your approach. I'm happy to offer that. I'm not. But this is one of those cases where it feels a little bit. You know.
So what does that mean exactly? Like they just like pretended? Like what is?
This? No. What I think Albert probably means, what I think probably happens is you have Amoraic interpretations that become instances of the Spanish and somehow they bleed into some of them quotes as a brisa. This is not an attempt at forgery, Pastor Shalom. It's just, I think, how things can happen, right? Yes, like the Baha'i melts into the Gemara. That's a written phenomenon more than an oral one, but nonetheless, that's what I kind of imagine happens. And when you look at that Ravina one, I have no other way to explain it, but I don't think somebody, oh, let's just not call it a brisa. I think it's just, you know.
Maybe also,
You're reading carefully, but you have to. Of course, because it's the Gemara's Chasur Mechasra. So, if you were writing as a Brisa, you'd probably write it differently. That's clearly Amoraic language.
What do you mean? And it's not like a real Jew.
What's that?
They're just coming up with that. Like, maybe you see that it's their own.
Well, what the Chasur Mechasra says, the Brisa makes sense as is. I mean, sometimes it makes no sense as is because on its own it makes no sense as is. Sometimes it makes no sense as is because it conflicts with what somebody wants to say.
This isn't more like a real word. Now I know, whatever.
So I think Chasur Mechasra really means that they're...
you could justify it theoretically by changing... I mean, you could justify it actually either if you have to fix it right itself, but that's more of a real problem here. It's just like, you could justify everything we just said if we... read a lot into it.
Yeah, but I think they're claiming, they're assuming that the Brisa had a lacuna. That's what I never read it. Somebody, I think it was, I think she passed away. No, he's alive. I'm sorry, his wife passed away. Professor Danzig. Still alive, do you know? Neil Danzig? He was a Mustafa of Y in the Peach Cerebral. He taught at JTS for a long time. He's a firm fellow. And he did work on, I think he worked in Gaonic stuff. So his sons were. I taught his sons a very long time ago, about 20 years ago almost. And so I think he wrote his master's thesis at Revel on Chasur Mechasra, and the Bavli and Yerushalmi. Some I have recalled that was the case. I never read, but somebody had told me that's what his master's thesis is on. So probably I don't know if it was published or not, but the library will have it if you're interested in just seeing. You know, if you can even get a sense of a summary of how the treatment is made. But it's not something you find, and Yerushalmi doesn't do that. It's a very Bavli phenomenon. Okay.
Is your suggestion about the, is it about both? I mean, is it separated?
No, it's just the last piece.
So the first one you think is probably...
I think it's clearly a continuation. The Gemara calls it the Sefer, even. Ema Sefer. It's the one after that I'm questioning, where the Gemara says, how can Rabbi Yehuda, did Rabbi Yehuda say? I'm probably, you know, there's a part of me that's coming to think that maybe we should toss that suggestion out and just go with it. Either say that Eitan's question is correct, or go with the violence. He's saying that doesn't the Brisa prove that my Mahal is not correct. And it's not the Amoraim, it's already the Brisa.
I'd be wrong, because it would be weird to have a Mishnah and a Brisa, or two things. To me, it seems like one thing more than the other.
Well, no, that's very. The Brisa normally is going to explain more than the Mishnah. That's not on that. That's expected. If it's really the Brisa and there's no way around the Ephraim's thing, then you would be proven to me that I'm not correct, right? What's both convenient and inconvenient in this case is that there's no Tosefta, that we don't have this Brisa elsewhere. It's convenient because I can say what I want and not be disproven. It's inconvenient because it might be helpful in shedding light. So, Lewis.
Like the language it put there, is it, like, it is, they use the language of this and this book or this book or this.
Right.
It is coming for something else. And then, like, if we wanted to find a hint that maybe it's talking about the Shah, the Varnish, which is the Kabbalah Shavuot, the fact that it doesn't talk about pasta or anything else, it's just what's going to make a broth on. But when you hear what it's talking about, two other foods.
Are you saying this suggests that the Mishnah is meant brachas, the same Shabbos? Because it never talks about that. So yes, but here I'm going to tell you that sometimes the Lashon of the Tosef is different than the Lashon of the Mishnah. And that is true, by the way. I'm not going to make a synchronous argument here, but this is something that has been written about. Also, what's his name? Sharma Friedman, I think, is he edited the volume introducing Tosefta? I forget who edited that, that volume. But I think a number of people pointed out that maybe there are many cases, even though we assume that on the whole Tosefta is after the Mishnah, there are often earlier forms of Mishnah that are preserved in Tosefta. And one of the ways you can tell that is the language. Sometimes the Mishnah will use a more updated term, an easier term. And the Tosefta actually have a much more harder term. The very same thing, which suggests that the Mishnah is a edited form of the Tosefta. Ronnie?
I think the question of Shabbat almost comes to something he suggested that there's a certain Tosefta.
No, so I think that's, I don't think you can talk about the Tosefta, the Gadol being, you know, predating the Mishnah, but I think that you can talk about individual Toseftas here and there. Right? There, Tosefta is also, if you're interested in, I think it's a reasonably good method, you know, categorization. In my dissertation, in the chapter, the introduction to the Tosefta, Adias, I talk about, I sort of just classify different kinds of Tosefta and comments in terms of how it relates to the Mishnah. So I think it's a useful scheme for thinking about things. Ronnie?
If the right were saying the Pshat of the Mishnah and the original Bayata before it's amended are that it's really one Beracha, even for the first level. How would that play into the Kakalacha? Like,
nothing, say, not at all.
Why? No, because we've spoken about
we do.
If Shah Mishnah and
if the Rambam had passed in a particular way, we might take that shot with us. But outside of that, I was asked by a very, very wise, very bright student who asked me a question this morning, learning a different sugya, he likes the Ra'oz Mahalach. And the question is, how would that factor in? Maybe you could say Safek Brachos Mahata, whatever the topic was. And I know that, and my opinion is, that the Ra'oz position fell out of the canon. Assuming whether you like it, I'm not even sure, I don't see the Ra'oz position yet in that particular sugya. The Mahalach of the Shulchan Aruch is what we do, that's what becomes canonical. And I'm not saying the Pesach of the Mechaber itself is the last word, but it's the Rishon with the Shulchan Aruch, with the Nosei Kalim, etc., how they handle it. So you can't go back in time and pull in another Shiva. That's just the way normal Pesach Halacha works. Right? The people who are, like, the Grunics, the Grub is a little bit of an exception to that. But that isn't actually the way Pesach works, right? The closing line of our parak tells you how Pesach works, which is what? The Gra had a somewhat unique methodology, right? It harkens back a little bit to the, I'll say the Rambam and the Rif, but you know, even there, I think that they felt themselves somewhat subordinate to the Gaonic interpretation, especially the Rif, but even the Rambam. Rambam sometimes differs, but pretty rarely. But it's closer to that. It's closer to what is pshat in the Gemara. But even Chachmei Sarad ultimately rejected that. I don't think Sardi post can work that way. I don't think Ashkenazi post, generally speaking. Everybody can have their issue. But I don't think that that's the way it works. So I don't think it matters.
Is that just like a practical thing? Like, you can't have a system which is...
No, it's why this business about originalism, the Constitution, is utter nonsense. Right? It law doesn't work that way. And you can't overturn hundreds of years of precedent because I have a new idea. Right? Law takes a particular...
So this is not like you're saying, like it could be, we could say, like, the Torah didn't mean that the Holocaust should be X, but because legal system is much worse during context, so therefore it's Y.
I'm going to push back on the formulation in that the mere notion that the Torah that again, I know it's an exaggeration, but Rabban quotes as a phrase, you know, this is the question, is the Supreme Court right because it's final, or is it final because it's right? And I think that the answer is it's right because it's final, because in some ways that defines law, and we accept a similar notion, that when the Sanhedrin rules a certain way, unless it's a Torah Midvar Mishnah, until they change their minds, that's truth. That's halachic truth. Right? If they change their minds and think they made an error, that might be a different story. And even then, it's not clear if they decide a different Shikra Das, it might be that the first one was not that it was wrong, it's no longer correct. But I think I'm sure I've said this to you before, whether it's your bunch or here, the Chazanish that they quote about, you know, these shikas that were, you know, not found, that it was Hashkacha Pratis, and that's rejected. So my mind, of course, is what do you mean? But then what's Hashkacha Pratis teach us now that they've been rediscovered? But the Chazanish is correct, in my opinion, that he needs my, you know, agreement. Undoubtedly, because that is the way legal, that's the way law works. You know, law lives in dialogue with lived human experience. And so that's why, as appealing as when I was younger, the Gruz, that type of style was much more appealing to me. And as I've gotten older, you know, I don't think it's that I've gone soft. It's that I have come to appreciate when you read classic poskim, and the Gruz was not a classic poskim. He was a giant, but he was not a classic poskim. And that's just not the method that they work with, right? It's even a little not Mishnah Berurah like, but you know, the Mishnah Berurah is somewhere between the Aruch HaShulchan and the Gra, but closer probably to the Aruch HaShulchan and the Gra, right? And when the Mishnah Berurah moves away from the standard mode, which is the Aruch HaShulchan's, it's not so much because he's a maverick, but because he's trying to be Machmir for all Shitas, right? The Mishnah Berurah will virtually never discard minog to go l'kula, but he'll discard minog to go l'chama, whereas the Gra was fearless. It didn't matter which way it went. You know, look, and sometimes the Gra, you know, on the Bein HaShloshos, the Gra is really a throwback to the old Shita. The Gra, I mean, that's an unusual case, because in that case, the position of Rabbeinu Tam is essentially a Toev in a matter of science, and he was adopting one side of the position of the Gemara, which I think we all agree is wrong, you know, as to the path of the sun, where the sun goes at night. So, you know, but there also the Gra wasn't acting alone. The Gra's position was that of the Rambam and the Rift and the Gaonim, you know, and many, many others. Somehow the Mechaber and the Rama, you know, latched on to Rabbeinu Tam. But sometimes, and I'm sure when the Gra said that also, not too many people followed the Gra. And it has eventually come to dominate, because even the Rabbeinu Tam next will be Machmir after our Shkia. Right?
Authority of
Amoran
to present
halakha
slash interpret
even at my
original
intent
of the
Tanoim,
and that's
somehow. And I
want to
say
Misadre
Hashaf is really the
part. Yeah, that's okay. That means not based on Sofara. I mean, their uniqueness is not based on Sofara. Then
the Bavli is binding if you believe the Rambam, and I think he's correct. This because Kali Sfar accepted it. No. It's not a Lava Shemayi issue. Because Klal Yisrael accepted it. Right? The Rambam in his Hakdamot to the Mishnah Torah distinguishes between the Kakados and Zeros of the Batei Din of Amarah and Ravashi as opposed to those of the Gaonim. In that one of them had universal acceptance, whereas one of them doesn't have universal acceptance. Communities that accept it. Communities that don't accept it, don't accept it. I believe that the Rambam is correct. You know, I admit it's a little bit, it's not Tilpul, it's a little Lundus. My explanation of why is it that we only justify violating Zeros to Rabbanu when the community does it already, my argument is that it doesn't have meaning, it's a minyach atira. The way the Bavli binding was that Klal Yisrael accepted. If Klal Yisrael is accepted, that Eim Esatu, Eim Epatu, Eim Erachtin, on Shabbos and Yom Tov only applies when there's a chashash of Shemei Yisake and Klishir, not when it doesn't. So Klal Yisrael has unaccepted that Gezera, has disaccepted that Gezera partially.
It's funny that the Rambam would never agree with that. It's funny that you're using what he doesn't understand what I was in another way.
No, correct. I understand that. I'm describing the reality.
I know. It's like
right, the Rambam might be standing here screaming, "You're not allowed to dance, don't dance, you'd be throwing stones at people, the base manager stands at the store." That's very nice, but that's not what Klal Yisrael holds. The only people who don't dance And Simchas Torah, I think, are the Lithuanians because they have no salt.
And the Lithuanians because they don't have enough room.
But naturally, not that we follow the corpus of Rishon Lechordim and Torah Ben Yosef, and follow the tablets of God. So maybe you see that one such and such and such works and such happened, such can ever be
able to. What are you talking about? Of course we. I mean,
we're everything our responsibility to follow what that's no sense, which should be halakha, to follow what is based on some corpus that we're constructing.
Yeah, that's how it always works.
It is. Meaning, we have.
I'm just describing what is.
Wait, but why are we? I don't know, but why are we in the top of the three people who come up with our Mishnah and some people more because they're more high?
We don't have generally Torah Ben Torah. In other words, we're talking about when you talk about the Gemara, and I think in reality you're almost. No shitas of Rishonim that have made their way through to us is going to fall into the category of Torah B'Damishim. The famous Ramban is Achdamah to the Milchamos. But the Ramban says, even though he does agree with the Rif most of the time, he says, you should understand, it's not that I think that the Rif is always right. It's just that if you read the Baal Hamor, you would think the Rif didn't know what he was talking about. And therefore I need to show you, and he said, and show you why, where the Rif Lavi comes from. And he says, you know that in our Torah there's no such thing as absolute proof. In Halach. I don't want to say that's not. He was talking about people who knew what they were doing. I can show you, you know, individuals, including rabbis, who say things that are simply wrong. There is absolute proof. Again, the Gemara is the standard of the proof against them.
But I'm thinking, like, theoretically, like, the cards are accepted something that was telling the Mishnah. Like, why should that be unacceptable?
I mean,
is that also based in this legal system idea, or that way? No.
Well, so yeah, the answer is well, that when it comes to the Sanhedrin. In Horegos, there's no carbon. If a basin is Torah B'Dvar Mishnah and they give a psak and the Rov HaTzibur follows it, they don't bring a carbon because it's not considered a hora. Obviously, until somebody figures out, a Torah B'Shikol Hadas is hora, that's when they really think that they made a mistake that way, that's when they would bring a carbon if the Rov HaTzibur followed it. So that's when I draw the distinction, that's on Aaron, also when it comes to Dayan Shittah. Dayan Shittah, where there might be penalties, ironically, is limited only to the Torah B'Shikol Hadas, because it's I can't explain why now. We've talked about it. If you ask me during Seder, I'll explain to you that. A psak given B'Shikol Hadas actually is chal, but it might be b'chayav the Dayan. A psak given the Shittah of the Ramishna is not psak. Okay?
We should follow the Shach and the Rizarama based on the
The later you go in time, the less canonical something is. I agree with that. But I'm not saying that the path never gets nudged away, but it rarely does.
If we have a short amount
of time,
we've discussed this for time of the Maggid Mishnah, and now we know what the Kargirsa is, that's been outside of the canon for longer than.
To be continued. Maybe it's a sheer lunch continuation. So tomorrow we will resume and try to get through most of this again. We're going to take another couple of days before we can get to move on to have some desserts.